member of the Unacceptables. My mind is malignant.
Today, I open up my book for all to see. The words I speak are mine alone today.
Yes.
No offenses, no pretenses, just poetry.
Welcome to Griot Silenci.
So the other thing is science and power, right? So part of my previous podcast about this topic of science and poetry were kind of going around on the ethics of science. And I think one of the drivers of science right now is, you know, is to get to have more power, like you said. You know, people want nuclear technology, people want energy, they want weapons. And
I actually meant it in sort of a different way. Mm-hmm. Like I think the question of how power and knowledge intersect.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I emphasize a lot in the class, helping my students to think about how knowledge is often made within spaces of power. And, you know, some forms of knowledge are viewed as valuable in certain times and spaces,
mm-hmm.
and others are not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that part of the class is to look at something that's seen as transparent and objective.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like a laboratory or something like this, and show that it's not immune or separate from culture or power. Right, it's also in time, it's in space, I think that, yeah, I mean, for example, although scientific offerings are often communicated mathematically, you know, sometimes they use metaphors and.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're anchored within a particular time and paradigm. So like, for example, there's, if you look at older biology textbooks in the US, you'll see that they talk about menstruation and they use metaphors about capitalism and productivity. Right. And so that's really imposing a particular grid, right, of producing or failing in a certain way. In a society that really valorizes capitalism as the way. And so I think that it's important to look at how science is enmeshed within the conditions of its production of knowledge. And, you know, there are also, you know, many more contexts. I mean, if you look at science and its intersection with war and totalitarianism, you know, I mean, we can look now at all the science denial that's happening in the Trump regime, administration, whatever it is. But the way that scientists can be co-opted and used and coerced, right, in wartime. And so that's a kind of a different but related question, right? The idea that that scientists might be manipulated and co-opted, et cetera. But the other piece of it is that science itself is not as transparent as it might like to represent itself as. That there's power that's potentially part of all conditions of knowledge production.
Hmm. Okay, so if I'm understanding that correctly,
mm-hmm.
you're kind of saying the just the concept of what kind of knowledge people choose to pursue. Is that the kind of power you are referring to?
I think that there's on the one hand, it's what's chosen to pursue, but it's also what's listened to. It's what's viewed as valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely there's a lot of capitalistic incentives of what is viewed as valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So what with the injection of science and scientific poetry, obviously it's a field that's been there. It's been there, you know.
Yeah, well, I think... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. what do you think is the, like, with this... What do you think is the possibilities and potential that as a society we can do with science, poetry?
Mm-hmm.
How it interacts with us, with our social values and our conventional ways of doing things.
I think there's tremendous value to poetry that is infused and inspired by the sciences. Just 1 second.
Okay.
I think that, you know, you bring up the question of truth as a convergence point for science and poetry. And I think that that for me, it might be something a little bit different. I think that I feel like truth is really not something fixed, right? It's something, this is linked to me, to these questions of power I just brought up, but truth is something that's made within time and space, within history and culture and et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think the closer intersection between science and poetry is a kind of deep, close seeing and attention. And there's a way in which I think that each mode of inquiry makes space for mystery and wonder and bewilderment, really, mm-hmm. as they try to describe the world. And so it's these forms of attention and questioning that draw me to each of them.
I see. Yeah, I had mentioned a quote that I found of yours from one of your interviews with Hawk Talk.
Mm-hmm.
It said, "I choose questions or problems that make me feel uneasy and restless, that mm-hmm. complicate my position and push my seeing."
Mm-hmm.
Now that quote, it really moved me. It shifted my perspective when I read it. It shifted my perspective from sort of, you know, a constrained position of pursuing my life. Uh-huh. Of the things I am curious about, to kind of a more, it was a more inspiring position, a position that is filled with less fear, you know, and more, as you say, the wonder, and more. So, can you please expound more on that?
I'm so glad that it opened something up for you. I think that as a thinker and as someone who wants to live deeply, I really feel drawn to sort of dislocating myself or estranging myself out of my zones of comfort in order mm-hmm. to re-see the world. And that can be done in so many ways. I think that in my most recent book of poems, I was trying to question America and its structures of power and war. And so part of that discomfort is, you know, I'm an American citizen, so I have my own complicity there, right? So that's one way of dislodging myself. But I think that, you know, you can ask questions that kind of launch you out of your comfort zone, and you can engage in practices that do so. And I'm also really trying to engage in practices that that do that for me, because I think they're forms of questions themselves. So, like, you know, I grew up with more of a relationship to, like, the city and the suburbs than I did to the countryside. And so spending time with frog spawn, for example, or rock climbing, or, you know, engaging with my body in a certain way in relation to the natural world, or whatever it is that complicates even my own picture of myself that I have for myself mm-hmm. is interesting to me. You know, how to grow. There's a poet I really love named Lee Young Lee. And he said something. I was at a poetry workshop that he gave a long time ago. Actually, it was almost 20 years ago. And I always remember this quote. He said, "Right at the edge of your gift." Right at the edge of your gift. And that meant so mm-hmm. much to me because it's so, you know, it's so easy to like write inside our gift or live inside of our gift or live inside of what we know mm-hmm. or live inside of what's easy. And so how do we find an edge for our questions and our writing and our living and our loving and our everything? So like, how do we just live large in a way that's sort of risky? Because mm-hmm. I think it's like a, how do we keep becoming is really, I guess, my biggest interest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
Right at the edge. In fact, it's interesting. It's good you say that because I've also observed for myself that some of the best poetry I write, best according yeah. to my opinion, are those that are really not just uncomfortable to write, but uh-huh. Kind of difficult to write. It's like yeah. they're questions, and sometimes they take more than one sitting to write, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. I tell my students, like, you know, like, write the poem that's going to make you cry. Like, go into whatever is hard, and start there.
Wonderful. Talking about your students, let's talk more about this class.
Oh, yeah, sure.